Good evening and welcome to the Outpost Frequencies, brought to you by the lastmovieoutpost.com for all of your movie news, reviews and everything cool about films. I hope, like me, you are completely and utterly stuffed from eating too much food yesterday. With us, as always, is Sean.
Hello.
Grace one. Hello. What's that? And Drunken no Yoda.
Hope you had yourself a merry little Christmas. Thank Christ it's over.
That was a beautiful voice. Have you ever thought of having it tuned?
I don't think it's possible to fix perfection. And when I mean perfection, I mean wrong in every possible way.
All the notes are there, just not in the right order. So have you guys had a good Christmas, a good holiday, a good break?
Yeah, it was fun having Kung Flu for a week.
I mean, yeah, tell us about that.
Go into every detail.
Not every detail.
Blood, snot, bowel. No, you know, it wasn't too bad. I it hit me pretty hard. I felt good in the morning, and then bam. And luckily, my doctor, he gave me a prescription of the evil eye medicine that can't be spoken on YouTube without us getting punished for that. But you know, the horse dewormer worked like a champ. I took the Joe Rogan cure, and I felt pretty good after about 2 days. And I mean, I'm kind of weak, and you know, don't feel.
I'm not even clear why people like it came out like that whole thing came out, those different types, when you know, the orange dick was in office, right? Mm-hmm. And now that he's gone and they're still doing this, like they're trying to hurt him. I'm like, he's gone, guys. Why don't you want people to have the best that they can that works for them? And then I see all the news companies say, brought to you by Pfizer. And then I realize.
Well, one of the things with the, you know, the shot was that emergency approval can only be done if there's no other treatment available. And to admit that this like 40 cents a pill thing that's been around for 40 years works, you know, would kill that, you know, and then it would be, so they're not going to, you know, they're never going to.
Well, we are glad you are feeling better, sir.
That makes two of us. Because I know George doesn't care.
Oh, no, this is all American stuff. I have no idea. Orange people, pills, nothing. Not getting any of it.
Even a limey knows that Orange Man is bad.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I was just trying to think who you were talking about, but I get it now.
Yeah.
We're not allowed to say his name anymore, you know.
Yeah, YouTube doesn't like that either. No. We can
say Voldemort, fine, but not his name.
No.
We've already been discussing something right on the edge of the algorithm getting very mad at us. So.
And how was your holiday, Yoda?
To be honest with you, it was quite uneventful. I still studying, didn't end up going anywhere. As soon as I get off of this, I'm going to be studying again for the rest of the day. And I put up one pathetic little tree that's already self-lit without any ornaments or anything. Usually I do the whole outside and everything. And I was just this year, I was like, the hell with it, you know. So, and I don't know if it was because Thanksgiving came so close. I mean, it was much later in November. And I just could not find any, maybe it's the whole, this last couple of year, this, well, really couple of years. Yeah. But I just couldn't find any motivation to really get up for Christmas this year.
No, that's fair enough. I was the same, very, very quiet over here. The quieter, the better. As far as I'm concerned, the last thing you want is kids enjoying themselves.
We all hate kids here.
You know, they invented cigarettes just to burn the kids. You know that, right?
it's been nice and quiet here. The British TV has been quite bad, so I've just been catching up with my movies. I'm on the cusp of my 1,000 movies this year, so I'm only six or seven off now. I forget the exact number, but I've got six or seven to see, and I've done 1,000 films for the whole of 2021. That's my crowning achievement of this year.
Man, that's...
I don't know if I should applaud you or pity you.
In some respects, I am proud, and in other respects, I do think, my goodness me, what an awfully sad life I've led.
I bet that you watch 1,000 movies or more in a normal year anyway. You just didn't keep count. Because I know I probably watch. Now, I'm not saying 1,000 new movies, but I guarantee you I spend easily more than 1,000, you know, movie hours in a year.
I think the achievement is actually keeping track of them. I think
probably,
been the biggest achievement.
Yeah, that 10 seconds of writing them down. My God.
No, after I put them each on one, you know. IMDb.
That went up to tens of minutes over the course of the year.
I'm still proud of my pathetic achievement.
No, man, it's pretty cool.
I think somebody put it up on Twitter, and I said, friends and family, work and health. These are the three demons you must slay if you want to achieve an accomplishment like this.
I always admire a man who's got his priorities and, you know, squared away.
Yeah.
Are you going to put up a list for us on the website or something at the end of the year to see what and all you did watch?
Next year I do plan on making more movies, as I have said. I am looking at with the movies, once I've moved, having a little office and being able to sit down and actually do more movies. So I'm going to make a video about it. Some of the titles I may leave off.
Debbie Does Dallas, Doggerama.
Because YouTube will shut us down.
Honestly, the first one is a yes.
The Joy of Furries.
Oh, no, I haven't gone that bad. But I have seen, I did go through a whole phase of controversial films. I think one of the most, I wouldn't say controversial, was Rise of a Nation. Made in 1917, is about 4 hours long. Birth of a Nation,
So you had a hard time defending the political message of that movie. You were like, no, give it a shot. I mean...
I just wanted to see it out of interest. And it's not like I cut up pillows afterwards and put them on my head and run around the house.
Yeah, had the official Grand Wizard.
Yeah, he's distributing pamphlets as we speak, man.
Have you people thought about it? No.
I'm just saying he's got some points. That's all I'm saying, okay?
He's got a copy of Unintended Consequences.
Get away.
Not stand now.
No, don't give me any more ideas for stuff like that. I went through some of the controversial ones, and then I watched one which I'm not even going to mention, and it was horrible.
Now you got to tell us what you can't say that.
No, I know what it was. It was Home Alone, the reboot.
No, I mean, even with Birth of a Nation, I thought there was a point to Birth of a Nation, and I understood that, you know, that what they were trying to do with the storytelling and everything else. But with one particular film, there was no point, and there was no consequences to it. And I don't think it deserves any credence for anybody to watch it. It was...
I'm still sticking with Home Alone Reboot on this. You continue to describe it perfectly from what
I... Eraserhead, right?
No, I love Eraserhead. That's a great film.
You would.
Anyway, right, so let's move on to some news. So the first news I've got is, it's not up on the site yet, but I did read the other day that in Baldwin Watch, apparently the police have issued a warrant for his mobile phone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the mobile phone is on the loose. Armed and dangerous.
That's the one that pulled the trigger, apparently.
They're doing a sketch. They're doing like a, you know, those sketches, those police artist sketches, and one of them just looks like the Android logo, and the other one looks like the Apple logo. It's like, did it look like one of these?
Yeah. No, it was like an automatic, not one of them.
It was rectangular and about this big. Was it black or white?
But with it does make me laugh, because I did think to myself, what are they going to find on the phone? Oh, there's a text saying, I'm going to shoot thingy tonight, lol. You know,
probably looking for stuff like, oh dear wife, I can't believe, you know, it was just a joke, and, you know, maybe something like that.
I don't know, nothing but guns and eggplant emojis. I don't know what the hell's going on.
If you shoot so and so, you're going to get someone tonight.
Could you imagine being the poor guy that had to go through Alec Baldwin's photos on his phone?
He has been in recovery now for the last 4 weeks.
That's a fourth suicide this week. I don't know what we're going to do. Okay. I mean, I heard that they were going to get his phone. I don't know. I mean, unless they find, you know, something that's like, I'm going to kill that bitch. Yeah. I don't know what they're... Yeah, in the end, it's like, did he pull the trigger or not?
Yeah.
And I'm hearing conflicting reports. So I hope that... I feel like they have taken their damn sweet time in deciding whether or not they're going to charge him, as opposed to just some plebe in Wisconsin named Kyle Rittenhouse, who doesn't have any, you know, Saturday Night Live credits to his name. You know what I'm saying? I feel like that
give
there's
it time.
He seems will. Like justice is taking its own sweet time with the famous guy.
Yeah, we know
with the rich guy.
Rich, famous, influential, you name it.
He's in
the club, and I aren't.
Yeah. Most importantly, he has the correct politics too. So
right.
Now, moving on from the news of all this American stuff that I don't understand. One of the news stories which did pop up this week.
We don't either.
One of the news stories that did pop up this week, which was quite amusing, is Sony are going to release an ultimate box set of Ghostbusters, which is going to be, I can't say this with a straight face, Ghostbusters, the first movie, Ghostbusters 2, and then Ghostbusters Afterlife. Now, what's missing from that is
it's even going to have the cartoon series on it too.
Right. Okay. So this is
the real Ghostbusters, or the one with the ape with the suspenders on.
Hopefully, but probably just the real Ghostbusters.
But what it's not going to have is the 2016 all female version of Ghostbusters in this ultimate Ghostbusters box set. I was giggling when I saw this because it is funny.
That is black belt level of trolling right there.
Mm. Paul Feig took to Twitter when he heard the news, and I've got his tweet here. It says, Sony Pictures, I know this must be a mistake. We do have a lot of fans, and Bill, Dan, and Ernie were all in. Stop giggling.
I care that we got a lot of fans. Did he really mean that, or was this a... Wait, are you sure this isn't a satire account of Paul Feig or whatever?
No, apparently it's got his blue tick and everything else. And Bill, Dan, and Ernie were all in it, and it won the Kids' Choice Award for Best Feature Film in the year it came out. So I guess it was an open
fight. Body decided that it was.
So apparently, young
clearly
kids,
a classic in the making, guys.
Yeah, young kids are obviously now, you know, going to be doing their Oscars for best movies and so forth. This was just, I'm sorry, hilarious, because I mean I've seen a few people who think the film is great, but I think they are literally just saying it just to. Win people over and say something different. Yeah, no, you know.
Yeah, it's those fan. It's the fan activists that we talked about several weeks ago. Activists. They don't really. They didn't watch it. They don't care. But they got to say that because, you know, they think it.
It was all female. Anybody who doesn't like it is sexist.
Yeah.
No, anybody who doesn't like it, it's got a sense of humor. I think you'll find.
Yeah.
I actually own it on accident. I swear to God.
Why would you admit to that?
Voodoo. I admit to it because I find it hilarious could get people. Yeah, VUDU.
Oh, right. Sorry. I thought somebody had a voodoo doll and went to a shop and bought it.
They made swung my arm. Jesus, what am I doing here? Here's my card. Why? No. Voodoo had given away free movies and just tacked it onto my account. That was the only way they could get people to own it.
Like they did, like you two did with a couple of years ago with iPhones, wasn't it? And they put their own album on iTunes.
Yeah.
And everybody got angry about it.
Yeah, it's the same basic thing. I mean, it's like, it's not that I have a physical copy or anything. I mean, I didn't go to the store. Just one day it was in my Voodoo list. It's like, you've just got a free movie, Ghostbusters 2016. I was like, okay.
Could you imagine going around to Yoda's house and going through the DVDs and sort of like, you know, so and so and so and so. He's got co-poster 2016. Right, just make your excuse and we'll go. Yeah.
Yeah.
At least you can hide it.
No saving him.
Yeah. At least you can hide it on digital.
To be fair, I did use the footage to make my Ghostbusters 2016 video, which was nothing. I mean, I put a lot of effort into shredding that movie, so you have to have the footage to do it. I'm just saying.
I don't know. That's that's a very fine line.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't talk about it in polite company, but for
Well, that's why I talked about it here.
What's her name? Has she taken to Twitter yet? Over at the black woman that was in it, they got so upset when.
Oh, I've no idea.
What's her name? Leslie.
I didn't look into it. I didn't look into it that deeply.
She will just sidestep this whole thing and just let it go. It didn't go so well the last time. I'm just going to shut the hell up, move on my career before I make a bigger fool of myself.
I mean, yeah, she famously like went all Cat 5, you know, insane over it, over the movie when it came out, right? I forget what it was she was angry about, but she's a woman, so I don't care.
It's funny. They say her character, I remember some people say, you know, her character was the most relatable in the movie. I was like, yeah, Jar Jar Binks is the most relatable in The Phantom Menace. That doesn't make either of them any less punchable. You know, it doesn't mean you hate them less. You just, the relatability is what inflames the hate, I think, sometimes, you know?
I'm kind of in one of those situations where I kind of want to see it again just to see how bad it is, but I just can't bring myself to do it.
There's some
every time I think about it, I go to the drawer and get a fork and hold it in front of my eye. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Listen, yeah, I mean, the thing to remember is life, you know, you only got one, and do you really want to spend almost 2 hours of your life watching something like that again? You know.
You watched 1,000 movies this year, George, and some of them could be considered horrifying racial propaganda. And yet, that was more palatable to you than Ghostbusters 2016. That didn't make your list.
I find that
hilarious.
Yeah. Says a lot. Yeah. We really know what we're dealing with now.
Yeah.
That was the funny news this week. Apart from that, it's been obviously quite a quiet week because it's been Christmas. And we have had some up on the website, thelastmovieoutpost.com. We've had some great confessions and talkbacks of everybody. I know the site's been very busy because everybody's at home trying to avoid their family, and so go to the site instead.
I forget who it was, but the person that said that Red Dawn, the original Red Dawn, was not a good movie is a communist that I would throw out of a helicopter right now if he was in grabbing distance. That's just disgusting to me.
Is it possible for a movie to be really not that good and totally awesome at the same time?
Yes.
I kind of feel like that's Red Dawn, you know? Like, it's melodramatic as hell, and it's got some pretty bad acting, and there's moments that you're just cringy as hell, and yet I watch it just going, Wolverines! Mm-hmm. The whole time.
I'm sure I have seen it, but I don't remember it, so I'm going to have to put it on my list before the end of the year.
It is so American propaganda. It hurts, but I love it. I love it to death.
It's a great documentary.
I don't recall the invasion of Colorado back at that time. But
let me rephrase. It's a great training film.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm sure I have seen it. I just like to say I don't recall.
It is a lot of fun. It's a great action movie. You know. It's got some themes in it. You know, if you like John Milius's films and writing, you'll like it, you know. Okay. Is it subtle? No. But, you know, it's about high school teenagers, you know, wasting commies, man. You know, what do you expect out of it?
That sounds good.
It's a lot of
Patrick
fun.
Swayze saved America. Or, as we say it, America.
America.
They don't say Ali if we pronounce it the proper way.
That's right.
So, like I say, yeah, there's not been so much news, but what has come out, I know you guys talked about after my complete debacle with the stream last week, you guys had the chance to talk about Spider-Man, which I have seen, and I know, Sean, you haven't seen it, have you yet?
Mm-mm.
No. I mean, all I will say about it is...
because I spoiled the whole effort.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it in my mind with every bit of minutia.
All the plot points were given to him.
Yoda recreated it with some silly string.
It was like that. Yeah, it was just like from Parks and Rec where
my Spider-Man like, underoos, and, you know, we had a good time.
It was pretty fun.
I saw it, and my viewpoint of it is it made my top five movies of the year, but also I was thoroughly impressed as a cinematic achievement for what they did with all of the actors and everybody they got involved. It was genius, I thought, in that respect. I'm not going to see anything like that again for a long time.
Genius is a pretty strong word. I mean, I'm sure it's great, but genius for real? No.
Get me. If you think about it, right, all of the characters that they brought together, I'm taking it, you know who's in this film.
Yeah, oh, it's completely spoiled. Spoilers for anybody watching right now, by the way.
When you think of any other franchise that's done something similar to this, say, for example, I mean, the first one that comes to mind is Bond. There is no way you could bring all the Bonds together for one movie because, A, it would just be... It's kind of physically impossible in that world, and also just it wouldn't have worked. You know, Sean Connery was 90 dead. Or whatever. Yeah, you know, dead. Yeah,
that always puts a damper on things.
kind of slows things up. Roger Moore dead. We got a problem here.
But exactly. You think about that. Think of any other franchise where they could bring three actors that played the same character. And bring them together in a plausible way. There's no other movie series that I can think of where they could do that. And I think they did it absolutely spot on.
Yeah. When you work within the rules of comic book universes, nothing else gives you that kind of, wide ranging ability to pull off the most out there storyline and it be like, yeah.
What gives them the ability to do that. It's because Disney has filled up Space Mountain with money and they can make these things happen.
Yeah.
How much do you need? Two or three handfuls.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Hold your shirt out.
But I got to say, I mean, I they could have just paid these guys to come in, do a quick cameo. You know, Ghostbusters Afterlife did that. It was like, oh, and here's the three Ghostbusters at the end. Why? I don't know. There was nothing organic about them coming in, and they put the glorified in cameo on that one.
Really? So the movie could have worked without them being in it at all.
It wouldn't
reference matter. To them fine, but not them being in it.
The moment that you could have brought in Egon at the end the way they did, and having those three guys there wouldn't have made any difference in the world except for, you know, Gen X nerds like us going, get the Ghostbusters,
but conversely, you see, that's why I do use the term genius with this, because if they had brought in the female Ghostbusters, which are then from a different, not universe, but different timeline, and brought them in, which I suppose actually in Ghostbusters you probably could do if there was a rip in time and space and everything else, you could have got away with that.
They've already written a comic where they had the real Ghostbusters, the Ghostbusters from the movies, and the female Ghostbusters all together in one thing.
There you go. Oh, so that means somebody at Sony's, somebody's going to make it somewhere sooner or later.
Yeah.
When you had three different Spider-Mans, obviously, the Tobey Maguire had his trilogy. Andrew Garfield didn't quite get there with the trilogy. But then to bring them in to the same universe and tie it up so well, I've always said that Iron Man to Endgame was a cinematic achievement, which is never going to take place again for a long, long time. And I think Spider-Man No Way Home was the same thing, that they brought these guys together and they've managed to bring them in from different universes, you know, because they've all got their own timelines and everything else. And
an intercompany crossover to boot. To me, that's what makes it so special. It's not just because we're used to seeing crossovers here, but the owned by another, or the rights owned by another company. That's the, that was the real hat trick right there, I think.
This was, this was what, basically Marvel said to Marvel, hold my beer.
But I think, I think Fiore's just done it again. Or Feige, whatever you want to call him, Kev. He's done it again, and it, I think he has tied these movies up, and the, it was a cinematic. I thought it was brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and so well done.
They really needed something too after the Eternals and all that other crap. It's
they've not been on a hot streak lately.
Phase 4 has been not started off very strong.
No, it hasn't. But I agree with George, at least as far as this could have been just nothing. I mean, I hate to say it could have been just fan service. I don't have a problem with fan service if it's done.
Yeah, me neither.
Story service is done first.
Yeah.
And in this case, that's exactly what happened. And then you manage to when you bring in Tobey Maguire, he's kind of like, he's almost like the elder statesman in some ways, you know? He's like the big brother for the other two, and has been through some shit, and he's at peace. He's had his trilogy. Things, you know, his life is going reasonably well. He's probably still got problems because he's Spider-Man. Spider-Man always has problems, but he's doing okay. But then you get to Garfield, and you give that character a chance to redeem his own failed movies. It's an apology letter to him. And he almost, in some ways, he almost steals the show. You can tell he's not just phoning it in. He's really trying. And kudos to him, by the way, for gaslighting us for a year and a half. I'm not in it. I'm not in Spider-Man. I don't know where you guys are getting this. What about this photo right here? Fake.
Go back and look at every interview, he's there actually going, no, I'm not in the new Spider-Man.
Yeah.
No, he was doing fake. He was turning into Trump. No, that's fake news. I'm not in Spider-Man. It's not happening. It's a tremendous fake, but it's not me, even though I look amazing in it.
If I was in it, it would be the greatest Spider-Man. It would
be the greatest Spider-Man movie. And it turns out, it is the greatest Spider-Man movie ever. I mean, this is going to have to settle for a while.
Now all I can think about is I want Trump to play a spy. I want to see a movie with Trump as Spider-Man. And I don't mean Trump playing Peter Parker. I want to see Trump gets the powers of Spider-Man and goes out, and he has to waddle around because he's fat, you know. And
he's got the blue and orange suit with the webs all over.
This web stuff is supposed to have the tensile strength of steel, but it still keeps snapping.
I could make so much better spider web.
Yeah. Goes into the Daily Bugle. No, Jonah, you are fake news. Fake news.
Right.
I am not a menace.
Not to do a brilliant segue, but I read on Twitter today that somebody said that Spider-Man was quite depressing because it was nothing but a fan service. However, The Matrix Resurrection wasn't.
So
I kind of rolled my eyes.
One, that was not a brilliant segue, and I want you to work on that for our next show.
I'm firing Woody Allen as my writer.
I'm just firing on all cylinders today, guys. I'm just.
So Matrix Revolutions. We have all seen it.
Revolutions or Resurrection?
Does it matter?
Yes, it does. We got to talk about these.
Right, Resurrections. The
newest one, yeah.
Okay, now, who wants to go first?
Well, no, I was just going to say, before we actually start, spoilers ahead. So if you haven't seen it, we are going to talk about the movie in detail, and we are going to be spoiling things.
I worry a lot less about spoilers when it's in both the movie theater and on HBO Max. You have all the opportunity in the world to go see it. So,
I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's been out since last Wednesday, so you've been warned.
Oh, okay, so who wants to go first?
I can go first if you want.
All right, you go right ahead.
So I watched it Wednesday night. I expected, woke-a-rama. I like Yoda. I know that a lot of people really want to see that in it, or they're expecting it, and they probably. It's not that bad. It's really not. It's got some little bits in it. Of course it does, but it's not. It's not a woke fest, but that's the least of its problems. That's like that doesn't even make the top 20 list of, you know, you get a few little. Yeah, did I what?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a couple of comments of, you know, facts don't, you know, care about your feelings, a little throwaway line. And, you know, there's a few things, but it's so minuscule. It is it's a tolerable level of woke. I didn't see any, you know, and I'm sensitive to these things, as we all are now, because we've been.
You go into every movie looking for it, don't you?
Because we are woke,
kinda.
But against our will.
Yeah, I mean, kind of I do, but it, I didn't see, I mean, I know somebody commented maybe on the website, or, but they were like, oh, it's a trans, I didn't see that in it.
No, there's an interesting.
And believe me, yeah.
Let me just interject, there's an interesting idea that Lana and Lily are old trans, okay? Mm. And the difference between them is that, I heard this on Tim Pool, and I heard another thing on Tim Pool that took an idea that I had to a much more logical conclusion, because he says this might be a conservative propaganda piece, which I was like, I'm not sure about that, but his reasoning is not unsound. Mm. But he, you know, one thing he says, Lana and Lily Wachowski, they are Gen Xers and they are old school trans, which means they believe in a binary. They just want to be the other side of that binary. They believe that there's men and women, and they just want to be the opposite one than what they are. The old school trans people do not believe in non-binary, that it's all just horseshit and every gender is there's a billion genders and all that kind of stuff. They're not on board with all that.
Is this a real thing, or is this Tim Pool speculation?
No, I'm serious.
Is this for real, or is this just this guy's
life? Is Lily and Lana that way? I don't know. But when I look at the movie itself, there may be some evidence to suggest. Okay, but they're not these Gen Z millennial nutbags who have, you know, are completely insane. That, you know, well, that we can agree or disagree on what they are, but I mean, I'm trying to look at the movie for what it is and what it's actually saying. I would say that this is a movie that is less than the sum of its parts. There are some really interesting ideas sprinkled in, but taken together as a whole, it's like, you know,
it's like, it's really like, there's parts of it that feel like Mad Magazine bits or Saturday Night Live skit. Not for real, you know.
I'm not sure it wasn't on
purpose. It really seems like it's a satire of the first movie in a lot of ways. You know, it's like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 of The Matrix.
Or Gremlins 2.
Yeah.
I called it a Gremlins 2.
Yeah. It's got some, you know, it's so self-aware and meta humor that it's almost distracting. You know, that's all, like, there was big chunks of it where it's so distracting. You're just like, just give me a story, man. I know, we all know that the whole thing with The Matrix is it's a very meta thing. And, you know, we're all in this, you know, cyber world. We get it. Stop commenting on that. And I did, you know, it's so distracting. It just took me out of the movie. And it's like, oh, get it. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I didn't like that. Neo's reduced to, I don't even know what, like, he's not the one, clearly. There's no such thing as the one, not anymore.
There is, but...
Well, yeah.
I have a theory on that, but go ahead.
Okay. At the end of the movie, we find out Trinity is also basically Neo, and, you know, they get together. You know, and it's kind of a little, in a way, it's almost a...
That didn't bother me, because a lot of people are saying, "Oh, now the woman has to be the one too."
No, I didn't say that. I didn't see that either in it. I just saw that two people and their love, and, you know, all kinds of schmaltzy crap.
It wasn't in the original trilogy, though.
Right? Yeah, because she, you know, has sort of like, she don't have, you know, magical wizard powers in the Matrix, but it's clear that she affects him in the real world. We'd all agree that she, without Trinity, even in the first three movies, without Trinity, he would be less of less complete or less of himself, right?
You know, take a look at what happened. Look, the original Matrix, the reason why we're following the story of Neo and Trinity and Morpheus is because he is the sixth version of the anomaly. The anomaly is just code. It's garbage collection is what it is in code speak, for lack of a better term. It's all this rant, you know, that ends up in this one human being who can control the Matrix, right? And because of choice in the Matrix, these randomized events of humans, of being human, causes the anomaly to happen in the Matrix, okay? And so every time this happens, sooner or later, the one who is prophesized, you know, starts the battle, frees people to go to Zion and everything. He eventually ends up with Mr. Greybeard talks too much with all the TVs in the background, right? And gives this really long-winded thing about what the Matrix is. But in essence, it's like, this is your turn to take a bunch of people and reboot the Matrix so we can clear out all, you do garbage collection in essence of the code, and you start this thing all over. And you're the sixth one to do that. Neo was the first one who didn't make that choice. He made a different choice because of his love for Trinity. Yeah. And the reason why the peace came was because he chose the love of a woman over his overall arching love of humanity, not in a selfish way, but in the end, that's what changed everything, right? So so this version of the Matrix is a rebooted version again. And we saw that happen at the end of Resurrections, where everything went from piss green to colorful. And now everything is too colorful. Everything is too sharp. I think that's on purpose. Mm. I think there's, now I'll get into a lot of other reasons, but at the end, it was the love of Neo and Trinity that created this new Matrix. So why wouldn't she be a one?
Yeah, I agree. I had no problem with that. I said, none of the standard complaints going around right now, I thought were, you know, I thought it's kind of a you're looking, oh, it's the, you know, it's like I said, it's they went into something expected to be, oh God, it's one of those, and you know, and they're seeing it, but I don't think that's in the movie.
No,
it's
other
problems, but it's does. Not that.
It does. It has plenty of problems.
Yeah, it's not because it's woke. It's not because of
Trinity. Here's where Tim Pool said. He said that in order to remake humanity and in order to get away from the external forces that will tear you apart as a person, you need a man and a woman and a family. That's what Tim Pool says. And that's why the two of them are the one. They are the two. A man and a woman together as a family are going to remake the Matrix.
That's an interesting theory.
I'm not sure if I see that quite that way, but I think that there's a lot of stuff. Like, I look at this film. I'm sorry, Sean, I've taken away your time here. I don't want to do that. I'll get into more of my theories as we go along, but tell me more about what I mean. That's what I've seen. You go.
I don't know. I've lost my train of thought now. Somebody kept interrupting me. So anybody? No.
Seriously, Sean, you should be used to that. Okay, I've actually watched go the film.
George and Sean in a two shot, and I'm going to stay out of it for a while.
No, I don't believe Tim's take, because Tim's pretty. He's always got the most milquetoast taste on anything, but.
I thought it was an intriguing idea.
Yeah, it's. I didn't even know he was that capable of something like that. But
I really like him. I like Tim Pool a lot.
He's all right.
My take on that was, I didn't go into the film thinking there was going to be anything woke in it at all. Going into the film, I just thought this.
George, haven't you been going to movies for the last 10 years? Why would you? Might be some in there.
I wasn't looking out for anything woke, is what I was saying. I wasn't going in there with that viewpoint. My viewpoint going in was, this is an utterly pointless film. This is a film that Warner Brothers want to squeeze the pockets of the film nerds just to get a bit more
out of them, you know, the sci-fi nerds who love The Matrix. That is all this movie was.
I don't think anybody would disagree with that statement.
So
the makers would disagree with that statement because they pretty much called out Warner Brothers by name in their own effing movie. They clearly were like, we don't want to do this either.
But that was, you know, so my viewpoint was, I'm going to watch it, but I'm not expecting much from this. And it didn't disappoint because I thought overall the whole concept of it was ridiculous. It was just, you know, what they had in the trilogy, 2 and 3 obviously weren't as good as the first one, but 3 tied everything up perfectly. And it didn't need another one. And the bit that really worried me was the Merovingian. Because he comes in and he's obviously now a bum because everything's been taken away from him.
Yeah, that was one of
that was way too on the nose.
No. But the Merovingian actually says this isn't ended, and he disappears. And afterwards, I thought they're planning another one.
He was old Gen Xers bitching about CGI and reboots. That was all he was doing through the whole fight. He was bitching about.
That's why it's like, is this a parody? Is this a parody?
I get
Sean's point about Yeah, like I say, you think it's a parody, but the way it kept trying to take itself so seriously of, you know, saying about, oh, this is just a game. And you had those nerds around the table sort of saying, oh, and the way it was doing it with a brilliant script, that would have worked really well, as I said before. But with
this
script,
there was no subtlety in that. No, at all.
You know, there was no.
Did you see the post credit scene?
Yes, but remind me what it was.
Where they basically said that all of this shit.
Oh, it's cat videos.
It's cat videos all the way down. Yeah. It's a turtles all the way. It's cat videos all the way down. That's it.
I got a question about that. They repeat that. Is he repeating like the same day in his life every day? Because you get them. Okay, because I was like, is that the point?
I don't know if it's the same day, but he's still. The point was he's in a loop. Stuck in a loop, and he takes these pills to stay in the loop. I mean, I felt like that was kind of impressive because that was them saying, "This is what reboots are. This is the sequels.
It's just another churned out.
This is Star Wars: The Force Awakens, you know." And what I really liked about it is there's a bunch of empty suits. I mean, I know they all dress cool now, but they're still empty suits in a corporation, however they dress anymore, right? And they're all coming up with these brilliant ideas that and they just keep coming up with the same one every time. Everybody's like, you know, it's not an epiphany. You're just an idiot empty suit.
Yeah. You're just repeating what the last person said.
You know what the Matrix is about, man. And then they come up like the guy smoking a joint going, "You ever looked at your hands?" Like, shut up.
There's a point where one of the females says something like, "It's about trends," right, or something. And I think that probably got way too much attention to it.
The fact that they put that in there so blatantly is what kind of lends me to my idea that the Wachowskis are like, they're not on board with all this activism bullshit that they would put it in there so I'll give the Wachowskis this credit, okay? Whatever they make, they swing for the fences. They've only hit it out of the park once.
Yeah.
And that was The Matrix.
Yeah.
But every single one of their things, they swing for the fences, and they usually have at least 4 or 5 ideas in every movie that I got to go, that's kind of interesting. You know? It's just, is it a coherent whole? No, the only one that's been a coherent whole that was perfect was The Matrix. Hmm. I can't think of another one. Cloud Atlas? No. Jupiter Ascending? God, no.
Speed Racer?
Yeah.
A lot of people like that for some reason. And every time I hear somebody talk about it, I'm like, are you joking?
But there are interesting ideas in it. And I, you know, every time I watch their movies, I think, I see what you were going for there. But, and then, but, all this stuff. And this was another one of those to me.
Yeah.
But I really appreciated some of the, like the beginning of the movie, I love because of the, I like the loop thing that he was in. And I love that every time they're like doing all the same stuff that they did in The Matrix, which I think was on purpose. It was a comment on reboots. But then you always see, like, the Matrix. Like, at one point, they're seeing scenes from the Matrix on a shredded screen. Pale reflection.
I hated that.
But what he's really saying is that this movie is the pale reflection. We just fool you because it's shot better and it's better CGI and everything else, right? But what they're really saying is that this shit that we're making here right now, that we're putting in your eyeballs, that we're eye raping you with, this is the pale reflection of what came before. And it's not.
You're giving them too much credit.
I am giving them credit because I do think they have these ideas. I do.
I just don't know
how well they execute them. That's my problem.
That's complete. Yeah, that was it's dead on, but completely unintentional, I think, you know.
I don't know. I don't think it was. I really don't. I think they have, again. The problem I have with this is that these ideas they all work in a vacuum. They're interesting ideas in a vacuum in that moment. As far as tying together the narrative into one overarching story, no, complete failure, complete and utter failure. As far as that goes, that's my problem with the movie.
To me, that comes down to the writing. I keep coming back to, and I've said this before, but someone like Charlie Brooker can take a kind of parody and make you think about something like this. You know, a lot of these episodes of the Black Mirror, and not all of them are brilliant, but there are some which really do make you think on how society is going and deeper meaning. Whereas a lot of writers these days, they just kind of, they try to emulate that. But then I suppose it's the whole committee thing that, you know, one person says this and then somebody else adds on something else and somebody else. And then
clearly commenting on in this movie.
Yeah. But then it kind of loses all that focus.
Right.
You know, so
as soon as he got to Zion, they tried to be a Matrix movie again for a while.
Ion this time.
Io, whatever.
Oh, Io, excuse me. Yeah. Yes. one and zero. That's the binary.
Just to come back to, I'm going to comment on the whole Trinity thing. I didn't go into it thinking it was going to be woke, but my viewpoint on it is, I think that they have done what they did with Last Jedi. In Last Jedi, they took Luke, who was the main protagonist of a series of movies, which we all loved. And, you know, Luke was us. You know, he was a simple farm boy. Not that we all live on farms and stuff, but he is somebody that we could identify with going through this struggle and becoming a Jedi and everything else. But then in The Last Jedi, they turned him into this weak, pathetic man who turned his back on everything, wasn't bothered with it all, and killed it all off. And I do think in this, the impression I got is Neo had the same thing, that Neo is a white middle-class male that was, you know, quite a lot of people that they all wanted to be hackers and, you know, live in the Matrix and save everything and whatnot. But they took him and they didn't kill him off. But the impression I got was that whole end sequence where they jump off the roof, it's Trinity who is flying and Trinity who is holding him up. And so it's kind of, again, saying men are not actually that good. It's women who are the most powerful. It's Trinity who is the real driving force.
It's very easy to fall into that. I understand, but I just did not get that out. And believe me, nobody.
I really wanted to see it in there. That was just the impression I got watching it.
No, I know.
Hearing other people's explanations of things, it has come across to me. It's more of a family unit.
Here's my rebuttal to that. One is that the focus of Star Wars was Rey, and she was clearly the hero in this, and she just found Luke on an island for one movie he was basically in. And we don't see anything of why he's like this, right? The focus of this movie was still Neo. Yeah. And I would say that the way they brought him back to life, which, by the way, was horrific, what they did there, Trinity and him to their physical bodies. I kind of like that, by the way. Wow, that was
strong. That was one of the strong parts of the movie, yeah.
Well, and then then all of it is him struggling to get back out again. And he's still not accepting all this, even though he doesn't really realize it. He's still not accepting it all. And he's the one who has to save Trinity, even though she ends up, they both end up saving each other. I just don't think it's as clear cut as The Force Awakens, where it's like Luke is, you know, pissing off a cliff at the beginning, and then that's and he's just grumpy Luke for the whole entire thing.
We didn't see Neo tore down and humiliated at her, you know.
No, they've saved each other.
Maybe the example of The Last Jedi was too much, but I just think that they took a lot of that power away from Neo. That at the end of the first movie, he was the one. He was gonna fix everything and save everything. And then come the end of the third movie, he did. You know, he laid down his life. Trinity obviously laid down her life as well, but they did that, and he did save everything and everyone in what he did. But in this one, it did come across as, whether it's the family unit or you need a loving wife or whatever it might be, the message was there. It kind of just took away from, I thought, from Neo, you know, who he was. At the end of the day, he was the hero, and for whatever reasons he was doing it, he was the hero. It was a good point you made earlier that he made the decision at the end of the second movie to try and fix the Matrix because of the love he had for Trinity, where the other five anomalies hadn't done that. But in this one, because it was just a bit where when Trinity was flying and she was the one holding him up, I just got the impression that they were just taking away that power from Neo and handing it to Trinity. And
I totally sympathize with you. And when you see something like that, and given how we are basically three battered wives here, as far we're Hollywood's, you know, Hollywood keeps slamming our heads in kitchen drawers and stuff over and over and over again. So I could totally get why you would have your hackles up at that. But I honestly think within the confines of this 4-episode story, if you want to call it that, that it was organically laid out to end up that way. And it doesn't bother me in this sense.
No, I wouldn't say it bothered me. I just noticed it was all it was. Like, sure. I get it. Like Sean said earlier, that was kind of one of the minor things that was wrong with this film. Ultimately, you know, it was just, I noticed at the end and I just thought, you know, they just emasculated another white male, because obviously all white males are horrible and should be emasculated. But that was, that was not my main focus when I came out of the film. My main focus was just how unbelievably terrible the whole thing was.
I just didn't find it unbelievably terrible. I just felt it was I don't know. I mean, just like, if they had ended up back in the pods willingly, I might have stood up and applauded, because it would have been so dark. And it's such a nice comment of how all we want to do is just watch the same shit that makes us feel good the time.
Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah. If they had gone for that, I would have said that was ballsy. That was awesome.
Yeah.
But they didn't. And I don't know. There's a lot of interesting ideas in there and a lot of interesting symbolism. And I do believe that the white, they're bright people, and they do put a lot of effort into their stuff. I am absolutely certain that Warner told them, we're going to make the Matrix with or without you.
Yeah.
And so they said, fine, we're going to do it with us. And then they basically pissed all over Warner Brothers throughout the movie. I kind of like that. You know, one of the things I think you mentioned, maybe it was, I don't know if it was in your review or the contributor, or maybe been a comment that you put down, but you said that the Morpheus and Smith actors were pale imitations. I was just going to come on to that.
I
kind of think that was on purpose. I really do. It's like you get this slick looking production. It has better special effects, no doubt, but it lacks all the soul. Now, Neo and Trinity, there's an organic story reason for them to be them.
Yeah.
But everybody else that has passed on, died, whatever, would be different. I love that the evil person in this is a therapist. I find that fantastic. I there's things like that where I go, God damn it, you're so close, you know, on some of these things. And then you get to Io and it's just like you completely crap the bed, you know, or you take it too seriously.
Let me ask you guys something. Had you read some of the stuff before you saw the movie of the two writers, and they made the comments like, we're taking the red pill back from the far right and the red pill meme? Did you think that? Would that have colored the movie any different for you, George? Had you, or I'm assuming you'd seen that or heard at least something about it.
No.
Okay. Well, okay. So I'd read that before I went into it. So I certainly went into it thinking, oh, here we go, you know. But there, they said they did that. I didn't see it in the movie though.
I mean, the idea of what's far right and far left and Democrat, all that stuff is just a nightmare now, trying to figure it out. I mean, they say they hate fascism, and so all they do is put in fascist ideas. You know, it doesn't, what they say and what they want to happen doesn't make sense. You know, yeah, yeah. Let the state put this guy away because we're going to fight fascism. I'm like, what? You know, that's not, it's not how it works, you know? So I don't know.
I mean, I didn't see any.
The like, labels blatant. Don't. The labels have become so meaningless to me now. You know?
Well, but you know, they made a deal out of it. It's like, yeah, in this movie, we're taking that back. We're reclaiming. And I thought, oh, there's going to be some big, you know, moments.
Yeah, I know. But when they say I didn't far say, right and far left, I don't know what that means anymore.
Well, just. No, but I know what I'm saying.
I always miss all of this when people say extreme far left and far right and stuff.
Yeah.
My brain literally just sort of goes, of where? Yeah. left of where? You know, and I just, it goes over my head.
I think maybe I didn't make, I did not see any kind of spiel in the movie that, you know, I did not get any real politics other than the studio politics maybe, but yeah. I didn't get that. And I think a lot of people read that and went into the movie thinking, oh God, but you know, and it gave them a, you know, preconception already. And I wonder if some of this that we're seeing about it is, from that, you know, those two writers,
I think the overarching theme that they wanted to get through is that reboots suck.
Yeah, that was the only thing.
I think that was the big one. I just don't think they followed through with it. I mean, they should have Gremlins 2'd the hell out of it. It really made it, you know, nonsense.
With it, the whole thing of, and this is going to sound really insulting now, but the whole thing of having a go at the sequel thing and everything else, I only mildly got that through. And I did think to myself that some directors are very patronizing in the way they do things. The one thing I hate is, funny enough, in there is the cat. And whenever there's a cat on the screen, you have to have a meow, you know, to tell the audience that, yep, that's definitely a cat.
Oh, I didn't know that was a cat.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Oh, really? I thought it was a hippo. Thanks for confirming it's a cat. Yeah. But I think if they were trying to be subtle about it, is it kind of the wrong audience that it is just going to go completely over their heads? You know, that they're taking the mick out of this, and this is actually a, you know, a deep and meaningful understanding of what we think about so-and-so. And then all the fans are just going, yeah, Matrix, Kung Fu Man, you know, and just completely missing the point.
Well, I think that's who they're taking the piss out of, as you guys would say. I think they're saying that all you dummies just go Kung Fu to Matrix, bleh. And you're missing all the points. Like, because I mean, there's a lot of interesting ideas in the original Matrix trilogy that, again, I think Reloaded and Revolutions can't put together coherently, about choice and determinism and things like that, right? And this is, you know, taking, they have some of that in here, but they have just so many other things in here, and they try to put it all in a blender and make it all work. And that's where it loses me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to come back to the casting a minute, because you mentioned Neil Patrick Harris as the analyst. Now, my one issue that I had with him is, and I know it's not particularly big, but if people look through the YouTube channel, I did a review of Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, where Neil Patrick Harris plays an evil doctor trying to get into the evil League of Evil. And all the way through the second half of the movie, when you find out who Neil Patrick Harris is, all I saw was this caricature of Dr. Horrible. And I thought his casting was really bad.
Yeah, Doogie Howser. I just see Doogie Howser, anything he's in.
Excuse you, Yana. But yeah, I did not get him as the bad guy in any sense.
I thought that was kind of, look, I don't know what's on purpose or whatever. So if you're saying I'm giving him too much credit, okay, fine. maybe I am. But the idea of replacing basically Hugo Weaving with Neil Patrick Harris is, I don't know.
I find it kind of
brilliant. No, I know he wasn't Smith. I know. But in the end, Smith is no longer the antagonist here, right? I'm talking about the antagonist. The antagonist before was Smith. with a sub-antagonist being this was Matrix.
Not the main.
See, that's a plot thread that's a nightmare. It's like, what is Smith in this? Is he on their side? Is he not on their side? What does he want? I have no idea what his motivations are, what he's doing, or why he's doing it, or why he's even still in here, not deleted. I don't get that at all.
In the trilogy, obviously he was the main sort of bad guy in the first one, but then what they did with him, getting him unplugged, so to speak, and set him free, actually worked really well as a storyline in the second and third one. But Smith in this was, first of all, Jonathan Groff, who... apparently he's been in Mindhunter and a few other things, which I've not seen, but so I don't really know him. He was just, there was zero presence on the screen.
Yeah, I agree. I was like, why is this guy?
Well, you know, I mean, if the idea is that everything is a dim reflection of what came before, then the casting is great.
That's
I think that was the point.
And could the same you imagine with Morpheus, being the actor that they're like, you're just a dim reflection of this better guy?
Well, I'm sorry, not to screw
we want you to really dull him down.
Yeah, we really want to make this the most bland, you know,
I cannot say in all the different movies that the Wachowskis have made that casting has been a problem for them. That they've generally cast people pretty well. It's all the other shit I have a problem with. I mean, they did V for Vendetta. It was probably their second best movie of all of the stuff they've done. Cloud Atlas had a really good cast. You had Tom Hanks. You had all kinds of guys in there. And so I don't think that casting is a problem for them.
They didn't do V for Vendetta.
They had a hand in it. They had
somehow.
A big hand in it. I don't know if they directed it, but they definitely produced it.
Screenplay. I apologize.
Maybe that's what it was.
I was going to say they didn't direct it. I was thinking, I'm sure it wasn't directed by them.
No, it wasn't directed, but they
written were, and produced. Written and produced.
Yeah. And I'm sure they were on the set.
A lot.
You know, a lot of their creative stuff was in there. But my point is that they've generally done pretty well with that sort of thing. So that's what leads me to believe that the casting in this movie was somewhat on purpose.
Okay.
And some of the things that they were trying to do was on purpose. If that's not the case, I don't know. I think time will tell as they, you know, as this all settles down and they finally have, you know, once they're released from whatever, usually it takes about a year before they can actually speak freely again. Yeah. I mean, that's what happens, you know, I mean, look how long it was before the guy in Justice League, who will probably never work again, Cyborg, really started running his mouth. This is the kind of thing. It's like I'm fascinated by what they were trying to do, much more than the actual product.
If the casting was absolutely perfect, then that is really insulting to the people who played Morpheus and Smith.
or they did their jobs perfectly.
And maybe they knew that. Maybe. They sat down and sort of said, right, this is what we got to do.
Can you say that in an official interview? No, of course you can't.
Yeah, right.
Because, I mean, when you think of
a stealth parody. So we had to,
But when you think of the names of Morpheus and Agent Smith, you know, you immediately think of Hugo Weaving and Lawrence Fishburne and how unbelievably good they were in those first three movies. And yet, like I say, what's his name? Yahya Abdul-Mateen II. And they were just, like I say, I said on the little meme I made, they were a sack of potatoes. There was just, you might as well have put a sack of potatoes with a man animated mouth on the screen.
I don't disagree with the results.
But like you say, if it is actually casting that they have done, this, you know, The Matrix, at the moment to me, The Matrix was absolutely awful. But if some of this stuff does come out, it may actually be the most brilliant film ever made.
We'll know in a year, right? In a year.
No, I will never say it's the most brilliant film ever made. I will say it's the most, it's a brilliant attempt to do something that would have
the best troll ever made.
Yes, would have been a great troll. But even then, they didn't. In my opinion, they didn't follow through on the trolling. If you wanted to follow through on the trolling, then Trinity and Neo willingly go back into the pods just to watch reboots of their old stuff. You know,
greatest in hits. Essence. Yeah.
Because that's what they said in the post credits. All you people want to do is watch cat videos all day. So, I mean, it's not like they aren't a little obvious about it in the post credits scene. So, I don't know. I mean, it's, like I said, a lot of interesting ideas. Ground rule double at best.
It has, I must admit, talking to you two guys, it has not changed my viewpoint, but it has made me think of the movie in a different way. Because, like I say, if Lana Wachowski has actually written something, and the other two guys who wrote with her, if they have actually written something which is a troll to, you know, being asked to do this, because I can imagine that, I mean, the Lily Wachowski, I think is now what Andy is now called, Lily. She has obviously sort of said, I didn't want anything to do with it. So, you know, whereas Lana is, you know, possibly just sort of gone, like you say, look, you're going to make this without me. And if I'm going to make this, this is how I'm going to do it. And I am going to take the mech out of you guys. And I am going to, I'm going to aim all of everything. You know, this is the problem with what's going on with Hollywood today. And I'm going to point at you guys and show it. And as a huge example.
And it's funny you should say it that way, because that's exactly what happened with Gremlins 2. Joe Dante didn't want to make it, felt, you know, it was a one and done, which it was.
Yeah.
And they wanted to make it, the studio wanted to make it, he says, fine. And he couldn't get anybody else to do it for whatever reason. I don't remember all the specific history, but he finally said, okay, you give me this much money and I get complete creative control. And he made the biggest middle finger of a sequel I've ever seen. Yeah. And I feel like they all, I mean, I guess with the money you're talking about and with the value of the property, the way it was, I think that it wasn't inner to really pull the trigger and completely wreck the Matrix.
Mm. Yeah. Cause they still love that property. You know?
Yeah.
You know,
they have too much respect for it.
Yeah.
And, but you know, I said in my review, I says, I'm kind of pleased that she had the balls to go where she did, even though she had them cut off.
Hey-o.
I suppose when you think of, I was just in my head thinking of the Fast and Furious franchise, because I mean, that has dragged out for so long now, but I still get the impression that all the Rock and everybody else, or not Rock, Vin Diesel and everybody, are all sort of really serious and passionate about making a great movie this time. Whereas, they haven't, have they? Because I mean, the first one was about cars stealing VCRs and PlayStations, and the last one was in space.
It was Point Break with cars instead of skydiving and surfing.
But it's interesting in that case, because they set out to make these serious films and now they've turned into just mindless super action popcorn. Yeah. But they embraced it though. So in a way,
family.
There's nothing. The only thing more important than family is box office returns.
That's right.
But no, I mean, they did embrace it though, right? So I can give. I can respect that. They're like, you know what, man? Let's just turn this thing into this.
You can't say. The thing I've said this before, and I don't know if you guys have heard my theory on this or my impressions of this, but the difference between a Fast and the Furious movie and a Michael Bay movie. Michael Bay movie is basically, this is cool. This is so effing cool. You're a moron if you don't understand how cool this is. You're an idiot if you don't understand
it's
got explosions everywhere. Don't you know how cool this is? That's the attitude that kind of permeates through all those Transformer movies and everything, this arrogant narcissism. And the Fast and the Furious movies are kind of like, look, we know this is stupid. Aren't you having a good time?
Yeah. I mean, come on. You're going to enjoy it,
We launched a Mazda into space. I mean, come on, you know.
It's an unpretentious B-movie exploitation.
It knows what it is, and it not just wants you to have fun. And I appreciate that about it.
Not that I'm a fan of them, but I, you know,
I kind of am a fan of them because they're not trying to be anything else.
I have watched the series this year up to nine, and I've got to say that each one of them is fun. It's a fun movie, you know.
I
mean,
they want you to have fun. Clearly, they want you to have fun.
You know, it's ridiculously over the top. I think it's a 7, which I hate because I still cry at the end with Paul Walker because that is quite sad the way they do that. But the whole
What do you mean?
The end with just with Paul Walker and the way he's talking about family and the song and everything else.
Yeah, why hasn't he been in the rest of them?
But Sean, when do you find out about Santa Claus?
What do you mean? What? Paul Walker's really Santa Claus?
Yeah, that's it. You got it. You nailed it in one.
That's why he left those movies. That's right.
Gotta help the children of the world.
I was wondering why we haven't seen anything from Walker in a while. I hope he's doing okay.
Yes, that's the conclusion we've managed to come up with here at Last Movie Outpost. Walker is really Santa Claus.
But with them, they are entertaining. They're stupid, but like you say, they've embraced the stupidity, and that just... I'm trying to think of a series. I suppose maybe Bond. I mean, Bond still takes itself Mission quite Impossible. Seriously.
Mission
Impossible. Yeah. Well, they don't go silly in that one, but clearly Tom Cruise wants to entertain you, and he'll do whatever lunatic thing he can to entertain you. If that means hanging off the side of a plane going Mach 7, he'll do it. He don't care.
I got news for a lot of people is that there's nothing wrong with that either. It's okay to have exploitation movies that are just fun.
Yeah.
You know, everything doesn't have to be, you know, some...
Citizen Kane.
Deep message. Right. Yeah. I'm just trying to think of other of sort of sequences. Because, I mean, even when you think of, like, the Freddy Nightmare on Elm Street, they got to a point where they had Freddy versus Jason, and obviously they got to the point where they're just like, let's just put Freddy and Jason together because nobody's taking it seriously.
Nobody else could pull off what they did in Spider-Man with inter-character crossovers. You just now contradicted yourself.
They've got a ways to go on that one. They got a ways to go because they not only did all the hero crossovers, but then they brought over franchises. Until they get to Alien versus Predator versus Jason versus Freddy versus Ash, I'd still say Marvel's winning this one.
Yeah. Okay.
But again, this. I'm trying to think of series that still take themselves quite seriously, but I think all of them have just embraced the cheese and this is, you know, we're churning out number 54 of this, but we know you're going to like it.
How many sequels can you make and still be like, oh, we've really got something to say, man, you know, on the human condition, you know what I mean? You might, even The Matrix couldn't do three that was that. You know,
Bond's been going on for 60 years, so who knows? I don't know.
Oh, Bond.
Star Trek's been going on for almost 60 years now. I mean, they've shit the bed in the last 6 years, but, you know.
I mean, that's the problem, though, is they keep trying to, you know, like, oh, they take yourself so seriously. Maybe not Bond, obviously, but Star Trek.
You know. But you see, I'd say the last Bond actually tried to take itself quite seriously.
It did, yeah.
Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig. All of those are very self-serious and important and very.
No, but then, funny enough, the Roger Moore ones weren't. The Roger Moore went completely camp. Yeah. You know, they got to a point where it's just like, oh, this is just stupid. Let's have so and so and guy with big teeth. And...
There's a happy medium. You know, like Octopussy or Goldfinger. That I think that's a very good. It's a little, you know, there's some, you know,
I'd put it at the Timothy Dalton level. There were still gadgets and still some silliness, but it took itself a little seriously. Or the original Connery ones.
Because, I mean, even
Love, fantastic, but, you know.
I did feel that Pierce Brosnan, I thought, was a good Bond himself, but the films, again, just started, you know, getting, not tongue-in-cheek, but they just got ridiculous, the whole surfing thing.
I like Pierce Brosnan as Bond. A couple of those were lame, but I liked him as Bond. I thought he was a pretty good choice.
But again, you've got to, you know, where are you going to go with this? Are you going to make a serious movie like No Time to Die was? It was quite it was quite well done in the way it's done. Or are you just going to go, let's go full cheese with this and, you know, having with gadgets and bullets and
with him, it wouldn't have. I mean, it would be so out of place with him, and especially knowing it's a finite little pocket universe of Bond.
Yeah, like I say, it's kind of interesting with the way series go and the way that they take them. And if coming back to Matrix, if the Wachowskis have actually sort of said, do you know what? Yeah, we are going to do this, but we are going to do it in full parody mode. But serious enough that people will sort of see the deep and meaningful understandings of everything that's going on. But we are literally there going, you know, it might actually be the best troll of all time.
Well, and I felt that's what they tried. They just didn't succeed as well as I would have liked. But I appreciate the attempt. It could have been it could have been a Force Awakens, and it wasn't.
Now, all of these good things we've kind of said about the movie, in no way does that take anybody should take that from me as a recommendation to watch the movie, though.
I'm probably sticking up for it more than anybody. And the thing is what I'm really sticking up for is what they wanted to do, not what the actual final product is.
I just don't want people to, you know, because there's a lot of people I've seen on Facebook that are like, oh, it's like, no, it's not that. And believe me, if it was, I'd be hitting it hard as anybody, but it's not this woke agenda push a movie.
I thought it was hilarious.
It's a misfire of
I thought it was hilarious. And Tim Pool says this might be conservative propaganda. They're saying a man and a woman are necessary to you know, create a family and create a society. I was like, I'm not sure I agree with it, but it's funny that
it's an interesting take.
You could come to that conclusion. It's not an unreasonable conclusion to come up with.
How would that even work without a test tube?
George, let me explain to you how this works. When a man and a woman really love each other, the woman the man buys her a ring and then a house.
We got ejected from YouTube.
And then she leaves him, and then he has to pay for everything.
Oh, right.
I don't know where kids fall in this. I forgot.
And then one of them goes to find a surrogate.
You get married, you have kids, and then you wish for death for the rest of your life. Yeah.
You live the same day over and over, just like Neo in the new Matrix movie, and you take pills to help you forget what giant mistake you made in your life.
I love you, honey. I love you, kids. I'm just kidding. It's just a bit.
And then
really, it's just a bit.
You jump off a building, and unfortunately, that's not even an escape.
My wife's just packed her suitcase and walking out the door. We're not going on holiday.
I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, boy. Oh, whatever.
You've been listening to three freshly single guys.
It would be an interesting take on that, because obviously in this world in which we live, things are now gender fluid, and you know, there are no longer boys and girls, and there are 32 other genders of whatever it is.
85 now.
But even Lana Wachowski is shown that, you know, changing sex in from being obviously a man into a woman. So again, maybe that is a social commentary on the situation of, I want to say, her own desire to have kids. I don't know, but obviously obviously she can't. I mean, I don't see as soon as I think of that, I always think of Life of Brian. You can't have babies. Don't you oppress me. It's not oppressing you, Stan. Where's the fetus going to gestate? You're going to keep it in a box? And maybe that is what she's saying.
John Cleese now disavows that movie.
Yeah.
But with it, are they saying that that is what makes the sort of nuclear family, that we should go back to those humble beginnings
It could be interpreted that way, couldn't it?
Hmm. Thinking about it,
it depends on how bad they don't want to be canceled, I guess. You know.
Well, I mean, go ahead, try to cancel the trans directors that broke. Go ahead, go for it. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah.
We know how that works out.
Yeah.
Like I said, noble failure, maybe, or noble.
But yeah, like I say, yeah, because you couldn't cancel a trans director, could you? Because that was
too far. I would call it more of a bridge too far, you know.
Because all the people who would never watch the movie would complain.
Yeah, those 26,000 people on Twitter would just never let it go.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, part of this is that you have to understand or have done any research in some of the deeper meanings of the Matrix, because the original trilogy, at least those last two movies, it ain't exactly really apparent in those either. You know, there's a lot of interesting ideas in there, but it's not like, you know, you have to do homework afterwards to try to figure out some of this. And I've done a lot of reading on it. I do think there's interesting ideas in all of these, but again, was the execution successful? I gotta say no. I don't think so.
Here's another vaguely interesting point that I read from someone, in that
those are the best kind.
Vaguely interesting. You've got me.
Yeah, I'm on the edge of my seat, baby.
Hurry, man! Don't.
Well, apparently the Matrix is on computers. No.
www.thematrix.com.
It's not that bad. No, but somebody did say
wow,
that in
you're
the
blowing
movie,
my brain, man.
All right, calm down there, George. Calm down. No, somebody said that in the in this new movie, Neo at no point picks up a gun. But he does only kind of use the Force at the end where he's on the bike and everything else. And I just did think that was interesting because they were the person I read was moaning and sort of saying, Neo doesn't even pick up a gun, you know?
Well, he doesn't in the other
that
two.
That was probably
either.
Me. That sounds like something I would say.
But he doesn't in Reloaded or Revolutions either, guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Think about it. He's got his Superman powers.
He's got once he got Superman, he stops the bullets and he does a lot of kung fu.
Oh yeah,
he never picks up a gun and Reloaded a Revolution. So that's a piss poor argument. I
told you
strike it down, take it off the record. The jury will ignore that.
That you're right. That was vaguely interesting.
I never thought about the other two, but I did think about it in there and thinking, no, he just goes around using the Force and keeps just using the Force with everybody and at the end of it on the bike.
That's a guy who's like, well, I watched the first one. And then I watched this one.
I have tried to put them out of my memory, but I can't. It is weird, actually, because in the past, every now and then I sort of come across The Matrix and I sort of think, oh, I'm actually watching that. And I'll sit down and watch it and enjoy it. But then I kind of always have to watch the second and third one just to kind of finish them off.
Of course you do. That's why we're on a podcast about movies, because we're the kind of guys that if you start the first one, you have to watch the rest. That's the whole...
I did that with Bond this year. I watched all of the Bonds from Dr. No to No Time to Die this year.
Yeah, it's like watching porn, only part of it, you know. You're not finished.
Yeah, you never finish it.
You gotta watch the rest of it. You gotta finish the job, you know what I'm saying?
I was going to say, I don't think it was like porn. You only ever see side boob.
You get full boob in the mud-covered rave. I mean, how is that not a turn-on?
Which one?
The mud-covered rave in Zion.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Bond.
Oh, well, Bond is...
Bond is only side boob.
Is there ever any... There's no nudity ever in Bond in any of them, is there?
Only backs and...
Wait a minute. Since you watched all the Bond movies, did you watch Never Say Never Again? Because that's my favorite Bond movie.
Yes, I did, actually. Yeah, I did include that in the list, yeah. What's funny
Sean,
about
Sean, I
that
may
is,
hate you now.
I'm sorry, man. I like it.
It's
what's
terrifyingly
funny about it is,
bad.
Is most of the way through the movie, he doesn't actually say James Bond until about like a half or two-thirds of the way through. It's always, yes, I'm Bond. and it's kind of like there's a real nod to sort of saying, this is not James Bond. I just happen to look like him from the first few movies. I look a bit like Bond, but I'm not Bond. All right.
if you like that one, you should try Thunderball.
Yeah, exactly.
What about Never Say Never Again? Do you not like about it?
Well, I don't know, the Cylon voiced weirdo computer game, the Bond running a horse off the top of a building into the water, the stupid jet thing. Rocket to torpedo. What were those? I don't know. They're standing in them and they're floating and it's way too old Sean Connery on that motorcycle. None of it. Thunderball
that's
was much better.
That's what I like about it is he's so old and you know, it's I kind of like that this aging Bond and
I also can't stand M in that. He's so incompetent.
Oh yeah, what's his yeah.
Oh, I'm just trying to think.
For some reason, I like it. I don't know why, but I always
watch
have
Thunderball. It's much better.
I've seen Thunderball.
It's the same movie.
I know it's the same movie. I don't know. I just think crazy about Thunderball. I don't know. There's something about this, the aging Bond, that kind of, you know, probably should have retired already.
Sorry. I've been sat here for the last 5 minutes trying to think of who was the guy who beat up James Bond in Never Say Never Again, and it's Pat Roach.
I'm glad we got that set.
He pulled himself together rather nicely after getting sliced to ribbons by the propeller in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Pat Roach is the guy who beat up James Bond and
Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones. That's pretty cool.
And Willow.
That is.
And Willow, yeah, that's right, yeah.
It's like, man, is your back going out? You're having trouble against Willow now? Jesus.
He's Willow. Only little. Yeah.
You're talking about the Val Kilmer movie, Willow?
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
It's been a long time since I've seen that movie.
That's been on my list this year. I did watch it. It's dated. The effects are dated, but it's still quite good.
Yeah, it was. I liked it as a kid. That probably should have been one on the post about movies that didn't hold up when you got older.
Willow is like Lord of the Rings light, like diet Lord of the Rings, you know.
But he's got magical acorns, though.
Acorns and a stick.
Yeah, they don't have that in Lord of the Rings. Gandalf couldn't have pulled that off.
No.
Gandalf has got magical acorns.
No. That's what I'm saying. He's got a kick-ass staff that shoots flashlights at the...
If you look closely at his staff, he's got his pipe inserted into the end of it.
Is that for real? I never noticed that.
No. Yeah, it's one of those sad little facts that I know that if you look close enough, when Gandalf's smoking his pipe, when he's finished with it, he just inserts it back into his staff. All of that sounds so wrong.
But my buddy Floyd is like, that's right. I should have mentioned that in the last one. Yeah.
Since on the top of the Sean Connery there, I wonder how bad he regretted turning down the role of Gandalf. What would those movies have been like if he'd been Sean Connery?
The thing is I know Sean Connery had got very disillusioned with filmmaking because of the green screen and everything else. And there is a scene with a behind the scenes photo of Ian McKellen crying at one point because apparently he was on a green screen with none of the other actors and he was disillusioned. Oh,
poor millionaire.
No, he's taking out $100 bills, wiping his eyes.
But I can't imagine Sean Connery would have liked it if he had have made it.
Sure. But how would he have done, though, you think? I mean, he would have nailed it, probably, I guess.
I don't know. I cannot...
Gandalf the Grey. I'm actually Gandalf the White. That's Sean Connery impression.
It's all right. It's all right. I can't see anybody but Ian McKellen in it.
Yeah. The weirdest thing in the world to me is that Sean Connery, a Scottish dude, plays an Egyptian in Highlander.
A Spaniard.
Well, no, he's...
Yeah.
No, he's originally Egyptian.
Egyptian, you're right.
Yeah, so anyway, but the guy that's playing a Scottish dude is what, from
Belgium?
Belgium or something?
Yeah. And the
Egyptian / Spanish guy is the only one with the real Scottish.
I know. Tell me about this strange land you have here. Tell me about Huggis. I've never seen anything like this in my travels. This very strange land you call Scotland. I don't know.
It's kind of amazing that Sean Connery didn't roll his eyes more every time he spoke to
Christopher Lambert. Well, it's Scotland. It's just a place that I wear. What in the hell are you saying, buddy?
Have you guys ever seen it's a really underrated and not known about very much nowadays, Sean Connery movie, Outlander, where he's like a cop on a mining colony?
I think it's just Outland.
Outland, yeah.
Yeah, he's like on Jupiter or Moon of Jupiter or something like that.
Io, I think it is.
It's a mining colony.
Yeah,
Peter Hames directed it.
The whole thing is just nothing but a film noir.
Yeah.
Yeah,
or even a Western, maybe. You might even call it a Western.
Western in space.
I was going to say with the leftovers from the set of Alien. A lot of the visuals look very, very similar to Alien when they're outside.
Hyams did 2010.
That's a great movie, too.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
I like it better than 2001. Now you guys can rate me over the coals, but I have more fun. I enjoy it more.
You're going to be all right with them. Yoda there, because you love it as well, don't you, Yoda? 2010?
That's a tough one.
You did a whole video with it.
I did a whole video on 2010, yes, but I call it an overlooked. You certainly can't call 2001 an overlooked movie, okay? That's as looked as it gets. It's a classic movie, and I appreciate it a lot. And I do enjoy it to a certain extent when I watch it. But there is no warmth in that movie at all.
I don't like it.
And it's 2010,
brilliant, boring as hell.
I don't find it boring.
You uneducated Americans just don't understand the British, the amazing techniques which Kubrick used. Obviously, you're just too stupid to understand it.
Or he's just too lazy to move the camera around once in a while. Just bolt it here, hammer it down. It's fine. Just everybody act in front of that.
No, I completely understand why it completely goes over your stupid head.
He's a lazy bastard. That's what it was. Brilliance from laziness. And I respect that.
Yeah. Just like I said before we started the show, there's nothing wrong with it. Sometimes overachieving or underachieving is enough.
I think 2001 is a fantastic movie. It's a very good movie, but it is work. I like a lot of the themes. Yeah, I mean, I can't say anything bad about the movie. But if you want
You don't put it on with friends drinking beer and eating pizza.
No.
Oh, I love this bit. This is so funny. Pass us another beer.
Watch this. This monkey's going to kill the other monkey. It's fantastic. he uses a bone to do it. I mean, that's dark, man.
So good. I totally get it. I totally get the movie. Yeah, it's really deep, isn't it? Yeah, I really get it.
I love the overarching conflicting themes in 2001 because Arthur C. Clarke is an optimist. He's a guy that is a futurist, a guy who's forward thinking. He thinks that we're going to improve and things are going to be better and all that. And Stanley Kubrick is not. He's a guy who thinks that the dumb guy in the army should get beaten to shit with soap. He's a horrible, horrible person. But so you got these two conflicting themes. So then you look at the end of 2001 and you see the space baby. You go, okay, is this a rebirth, an evolution that we are moving on to a higher plane as humanity, that we have made that next step moving forward? Arthur C. Clarke? Or is this, you're nothing but babies and you will never stop being babies. And as a species, this is as good as you get, just beating the shit out of each other and going to war and killing each other because you're nothing but animals and babies.
This is so typical of Americans. Completely missed the point of the whole thing. Completely missed the point.
Sure, I did. The question is, which I just feel like the question that you have to ask yourself is, which one are you?
I'm the guy that watches 2010 because it's a lot more fun.
You turn it off. Give me Fast and the Furious 7 here, all right? I want to watch Paul Walker die again.
I want to see Paul Walker dress as Santa Claus right now.
That's right. He gets killed in the chimney, and then the girl from Gremlins is all weepy about it.
Yeah, 2010 is really good though.
Can I just mention, since we're sort of going off track now, I did see quite an interesting movie the other day, which you probably haven't heard of. 2006, Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon.
Great movie, excellent movie. That's how you do a satire parody of a genre right there.
I have not seen it, but I will.
Masterpiece.
The basic premise of the movie is, if Freddy Krueger had a film crew following him around planning his kills, that's what it was.
I wouldn't say Freddy Krueger. I would say Jason. And telling him about how
he's a horror type.
He wants to become a supernatural
slasher movie. He's a slasher movie bad guy. And so they're following him around and he's explaining to him how he prepares everything ahead of time and how he manages
the heads on this axe. She picks it up and takes her first swing, it's just going to snap off.
A great twist at the ending that's just awesome.
Does he kill the film crew? I just want to know.
Of course he does.
Awesome. Awesome.
Well, okay. No, the thing is the film crew get involved with what's going on because they don't think it's right that he's going to kill these people.
He's such a master chess player that he's already incorporated them in on the plan, and the final girl actually turns out to be the girl that's interviewing for the documentary. And the whole time they think it's this other girl with this group of teenagers.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was just such a clever take on so many slasher movies that you've seen, and it's kind of like, how do they escape through there and all this lot? And he explains, well, I'm going to chase her down here, and then the only exit is through that window, so I know she's going to go that way. But behind the window, I've already said, it was brilliant.
Give it a shot. Is it like a mockumentary kind of?
Like a mockumentary. It's very. It's a hell.
Got Chris lot. Guest, Eugene Levy. They make appearances.
No. nobody in there. The only person that you will recognize is Robert Englund, who plays quite a clever role in it as well.
Yeah, he plays the you know, the cynical detective out to stop Leslie Vernon. And it's all done just like they all know each other and they all know it's like this assigned role. It's you got to watch it to get it, really.
I like the fact that there's like a bad guy society, or not society, but they're all friends with each other. And it's kind of like, oh, I learned from so-and-so. We're going to go and meet him today. Yes, yes, I did.
He's my hero.
27 people and all this kind of thing. And it was very. Oh, I also watched. Sorry, just to mention, I also watched A Christmas Story.
Is that your first time, isn't it?
First time.
You broke your BB gun, Cherry.
Didn't get it at all.
Turn him off. Just get him the hell out of here.
You're done, buddy. It's me and Sean who are going to talk to him now. Mutant your ass.
Oh my god.
I didn't get it. It's a couple of people on Twitter, because I said on Twitter, I didn't get it. A couple of people said that in America it's kind of played on Christmas 24 hours a day for a month or something. I'm sure if I'd seen this as a kid, I probably would have enjoyed it, but I wasn't. I didn't get it.
You're just stupid.
You British, you don't understand. You're obviously don't understand the brilliance of this movie. No, it's a bunch of fun vignettes put together, and it's just funny. And the whole, you know, with our overarching storyline of him trying to get the BB gun, and then the final irony is that he ends up shooting his damn eye out.
I think this is a case of not being American takes away the a lot of it for you. This is a very
even being American.
People get cold at Christmas, so
this came out in 1983, you know, and while there are some things that were similar even at that time. We're talking this took place in what, 1940?
Yeah, like 39, 40.
So even from a boomer standpoint or something, we're talking before them. And but some of the stuff still resonated. You know, a cranky father who thinks he knows more than he does. And, you know,
I like these
Melinda Dillon is fantastic in it as the mother.
Yeah. It, like I say, I can appreciate why people like it, but just the whole concept of the story for me just didn't.
I never not laugh. When he gets leg lamp, I never not laugh when when he looks at it, he goes,
Fragile,
it must be from Italy.
It's a major award.
That's fragile, honey. Right.
my favorite part is when he's on the mall Santa, he and takes his boot and pushes him on the face.
Just before he tells him, forget it, kid. You'll shoot your eye out. He gets crapped on by Santa, of all people.
It's a great movie. You just don't have any taste, clearly.
I've been trying to, with the last few movies, watch things I haven't seen before. And that came up, and I watched Amazon Women on the Moon by Joe Dante and John Landis.
I've seen it. There were places where I laughed. It's very hit or miss. I like the visible invisible man.
Yeah, that was great.
That was the only one that I can remember that I really enjoyed. He's just walking around naked going, ooh, nobody can see me. And everybody's just floating. Humor him. Ooh. Just humor him.
If you like that, you should watch Sorority Babes in the Slime Ball Bowlerama.
That sounds my cup of tea.
Oh, it's right. It's
the title alone is a work of genius.
Oh, you would be surprised how much you'll enjoy it.
I did also watch, somebody mentioned, this is really random, but A Funeral in Berlin, which was the sequel to the Ypres file.
Oh, no and kidding.
I'd never seen the Ypres file either. I don't recall ever seeing it. And I watched
it's
that.
It's pretty good.
Oh, it's great. The third act is brilliant. But then The Funeral in Berlin was very much...
Is Michael Caine in it?
Yes.
Too? I did not know that. I didn't even know they made a sequel to it with him.
It was a friend of mine who mentioned it to me, and I said, Funeral in Berlin? And he said, yeah, it's got so-and-so and Michael Caine in it. And he said, it's a thing. So I found both of them and watched both of them. And like I say, the first one I thought was brilliant. The second one was basically trying to smuggle somebody out of East Germany. It kind of reminded me, actually, of Mission Impossible. Not Mission Impossible, but kind of a couple of the James Bonds where somebody wants to defect and they put one of the guys through a tunnel and that kind of thing. I forget which Bond it is now. But it reminded me of that. Ypres File is fantastic. A Funeral in Berlin, it's worth a watch if you haven't seen it, but it's not as good as the first one.
I'm going to have to check that out because I like the first one a lot. And I'd like to see more of that universe.
Never heard of these Star Wars movies. I never heard of these.
No. No, these are big brain movies from the Cold War.
Ah,
I've never heard of British.
You'll have to send me some links or the titles. So I'll take a look. I did see one recently.
I tell you what, Michael Caine in the Ipcress Files is basically Austin Powers' dad when he was young. no joke.
Actually,
no
joke. Yeah. But not done in the parody way, but yes. Not
a parody, but it's like him when he was young. Austin Powers' dad when he's young. That's a good description.
I did see one recently with a friend of mine recommended. It was called Folks. It's like with two Fs. And it's with Roger Moore and Anthony Perkins, you know, from Psycho.
Okay. Yeah.
And the idea is that Perkins and a group, it's almost a, I don't know, it's kind of like a Die Hard before Die Hard, you know, or one of those type of movies. Group of terrorists take over a boat or a couple of oil rigs, and they want to get a bunch of money. And they need Roger Moore's crack team of dive specialists, guys that can go underwater and he's the most punctual guy. Like he trains these guys over and over and over again with stopwatches and things like that to perform all these missions. And most of them have to do with diving and getting underwater, you know, all this stuff. So he's crack out there. He's also the most misogynist pig you'll ever see in your life, which for Roger Moore is pretty hilarious.
And
I mean, he just treats women in this thing like garbage.
Oh, I like the sound of that.
It's
already.
And, it's not the greatest, you know. I mean, it's okay, you know, especially these days, because I think this was made sometime in the mid 70s. So the action, special effects, they are what they are. But overall, I kind of enjoyed it. Kind of enjoyed the back and forth between him and Perkins. It's something that it's a formula that's been emulated a lot, and this feels like the prototype of it in some ways.
Yeah.
But it's kind of strange, isn't it,
how some movies come out like that, but they're actually based on like some obscure 50s movie, which nobody's ever seen before. And
Do you guys like that Roger Moore movie, Shout at the Devil, where him and Lee Marvin's in it? It's set in Africa during World War I.
One you're talking about. I've never seen it.
It's pretty good too.
Yeah, right.
There's so many classics I need to go through and make it happen. And then, you know, I just end up watching Star Wars again. And it's just pathetic.
I think sometimes half my problem is going through lists of movies and then just trying to pin down something. I did watch, and this is an interesting take on this. I did watch again yesterday, because yesterday was Christmas, wasn't it? It's a Wonderful Life, which I haven't seen for a long time. And I thought I'd watch it again. And basically, the moral of the story out of that is, if you're a nice guy, bad people will push you to suicide, and it's only divine inspiration that will save you. That's what I got out of that film.
That about sums it up.
There's an old episode of Friends. I don't know if you've ever seen that show over on your side, George.
Friends, yeah.
But Phoebe, they're showing her. They're watching Old Yeller, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, "Oh, I love this movie. It's so nice. They have the dog." Yeah. They're like, "What are you talking about?" And she's like, her mom would never let her see the endings. She's like, "They put the gun down. What are you doing?" And then the guy blows away the dog. She's like, "What kind of sick shit is this?"
Dog snuff movie.
So she starts going through all these movies that she had never seen the endings of, and they're just like all these horrible ending movies. And finally, Monica says, "Look, watch It's a Wonderful Life. It'll restore your faith in humanity." And she doesn't get to the ending. She's like, "Why should I watch this? This guy gets shit on. He loses his hair. He gets fired. I had to turn it off. I couldn't watch anymore. What kind of sicko crap is this?"
Yeah, that's like I say. That's the message I got from it. Like I say, if you're a nice person, the only way you're going to be helped is if God intervenes. I'm just trying to find.
Clearly, you got the message they were intending.
Yeah.
I love the way it's badly explained plot movies. Farm boy gets indoctrinated into a religion and kills billions of people. Star Wars. Because that's basically what it is.
Did you ever say it was running around the internet, like especially in the 90s, the Star Wars drinking game? you know, drink whenever.
Yeah.
Like, drink whenever Princess Leia is completely covered except for her hands and her face. Take two drinks if she's wearing gloves. Take three drinks if she's almost totally nude. Okay. Things like that. And then one of them was...
Jedi would kill you.
Jedi would kill you. So it says, drink whenever a single Ewok gets killed and the camera lingers longer than when the Death Star exploded, killing millions of people. 13 seconds. Count them.
Oh God!
We should do that as a talk back on the website at some point in time. Describe movies badly. I think it would come up with some good ones. It's the same as the old porno versions of films, isn't it? Like Jurassic Poke and
Forrest Hump.
Yeah, Shaving Ryan's Privates. Exactly. Again, they always come up with some really clever ones. Really clever ones.
They're a lot more clever than anything in the actual movie.
Yeah, that's usually the case.
Isn't it's it? Like the entire creative budget went for the title, and then that's, you know.
It reminds me of the when you see these fan made movie posters from movies from the past, you know, 20 years, because you know movie posters now suck, and some people turn out some just amazing mute, and you're like, oh man, that would have been like, it's like the kind of cover art we'd see on
if stuff. It was back anything like the poster, it would have been amazing. It was nothing like the poster.
Well, it's the same sometimes, isn't it, when they do them computer games and they show sort of, you know, and you're thinking, wow, this looks amazing, and it's like 8-bit pixelated blocks moving across the screen. It's like, that's not what the trailer looked like when I watched the trailer. Is that a car?
it was the best during Atari games. You see a guy in a spaceship and he's like flying through the asteroid field and there's stuff coming out of it. It looks like Star Wars. Then you get it play it. It's like it's a vague triangle. I don't know what the hell I'm looking
at. I think my first introduction to that level of disappointment was the computer game of Predator, and my friends, like, they had a computer. He's like, oh, we got the computer or this Predator video game, and it's just a guy comes down in a helicopter and walks out on a, you know, it's just like, what?
Like disappointing children with insane promises of entertainment has been going on since the days of Sea Monkeys.
Yeah.
It's a funny story about the Predator game. I had a Spectrum back in the day, and I remember coding a little animation of Predator walking, and it was literally two frames, one with one legs one way and one with legs the other way. And I remember sort of coding for literally hours just to have this thing walk across the screen. And I just remember thinking, whoa, the game they actually made was like so much better than this. That's like really clever.
That's totally what you find. It's like, I think I want to code games for a living. You code for 6 weeks just to make something walk across the screen for about 3 seconds. You're like, I don't want to do this anymore.
There was a series over here called The Fast Show, and it always used to have this guy who his catchphrase was, I'll say to it, but he went to see somebody do an animation, and he's talking to him, and so this guy's going, and so what we do is then if I want the hand to do this, I get the thing and then just move it a little bit and then take a photo and then move it a little bit like this, and this guy's carrying on, and this other guy would eventually always go, I'm going to go to the pub. And again, with animation, it's kind of, you know, what they actually go through to make the animation is quite incredible. And I think you've really got to have that disposition to be able to do that.
It's called autism, I think. Nobody else could do that.
Yeah, that's true.
Care.
So, folks, that's The Matrix Resurrections. It has a little drink on occasion. So I think we ought to wrap this up. We've been going on, and I have work to do this afternoon, so I appreciate it. We're back on track. We have our weekly Sunday live stream happening, and as we move forward this year, I think, like you said, you're going to be making more videos. I plan to be making more videos, and I think some of us are going to work on doing something shorter, probably more pithier, during the week, on the evenings maybe, or coming up with something a little bit more, I would really like to do it like a news show, like a 5 to 7 minute news show once or twice a week. Just kind of.
It's never going to be 5 to 7 minutes without us re-talking.
Well, I didn't say it was live.
Oh, okay. So you can edit it down.
Yeah. Hack. How long was it? Well, I took 27 hours worth of footage. I got it down to 5 minutes. Was that hard? Sadly, it wasn't. It was 27 hours of bullshit, most of it.
Yeah. I was just going to say, this is what the live stream is. It's 2 hours of talking with actually about, 3 minutes of content?
Yeah, yeah. We're sorry. We're very sorry, everybody. But we hope you enjoyed it. We didn't get any chats today. I'm guessing everybody has got better things to do on their holiday weekend than listen to the three of us.
Yeah, they'd rather be with their family.
Weird. It's like a cult. I don't know. So, but
family. Nothing more important. Family.
I get together with the family and I drive an ambulance into a cliff. Why?
On that
what
note,
do you mean why?
It's cool.
I don't understand the question. So please come to lastmovieoutpost.com. We are the new cool news. We are the ones that will give you the latest in movies, streaming, and all things entertainment, including the Alec Baldwin watch. We'll see what happens with that. We have this every week on Sundays at noon Central Time, 6 o'clock UTC or UK time. And three of us just rambling on about the latest movie or piece of entertainment that's come out. And you can reach us at contactus@lastmovieoutpost.com. If you have any news tidbits you'd like to share with us, let us know. We'll get a story up on the site. You can reach me. Well, you can reach us on Twitter @MovieOutpost. You can reach me specifically @DrunkenYoda1. And you can reach @NotGeorgeLucas at @NotGeorgeLucas1. We also have a Facebook page /LastMovieOutpost. So you got lots and lots of ways to find us, to communicate with us. And if you're not doing it, you're just not applying yourself. Guys, I appreciate it. I had a good time this weekend.
Indeed.
It's always fun, and we'll look forward to it next week. Got anything last comments there, Sean? He's not the best color man in the industry for nothing, folks.
You got to give him notice of questions like that.
Yeah, wait a minute. Let me
put him on the spot. You can
How about that?
It's amazing. Boom. You can actually see him piss his pants when he gets the pressure on.
Hold on. Let me. I'll fire a gun off or something. Hold on.
George saved me here.
I was going to say that next week is going to be 2022. It's going to be next year. And so with it, I think next week what we should do is just have a chat about what came out in 2021. I know one of the guys at the Last Movie Outpost has put together a few of the contributors' top 5 movies. So maybe we could have a list of those and sort of the things we liked and things we didn't like over the last year.
Yeah, I think a few.
Worst of list for the show or for us here would be pretty fun. Top 5 worst or something like that.
I don't have that kind of time.
Well, just pick 5 random ones and call that it.
We're gonna have to keep it. Yeah, we have to put some guardrails on that. I'm just saying.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Or but I have a bottle of rum just sitting here.
Slowly as he goes on.
Yeah.
And another thing, Gone with the Wind was rubbish.
You know what the problem with Gone with the Wind was? It wasn't racist enough.
It was.
That's the problem.
It was almost as bad as 2001.
Yeah, 2001. Not racist enough.
The aliens. I didn't see any white aliens murdering black aliens.
Gone with the Wind could have used a vampire.
That's right.
That's all I'm saying. Could have used a vampire.
Scarlet is kind of a vampire in it.
That's right.
Yeah, no, she's a woman.
I'm going to have to put that down on my list. I think I am going to try and watch that before the end of the year because, like I say, I have never seen it.
It's a classic, man.
I know, but it's just very long. I know it's very long. I'm just going to watch it just for the outrageous swearing at the end.
It's awful offensive, man. I don't know. I'll see if I can find a censored copy for you. That way it doesn't have British sensibility.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a rascal. Whatever
that's
the
gotta
British
be, that's got to be the is. Worst use of censorship. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a.
Yeah.
What?
Funny enough, they've just had Crocodile Dundee on daytime TV over here, and that's been very censored.
Wow. Crocodile Dundee was censored.
What in the world?
Because it's got the S word in it. And you can't have that before 9 o'clock.
Do they censor that? Do they censor him grabbing a tranny's balls?
No, funny enough,
that part they don't censor.
That's fine. That's okay. You've got to teach kids things like that. Because otherwise,
he takes
they don't
a
know.
Giant knife and pokes it through a crocodile's brain. Did they show that?
It was mildly edited, so it wasn't as graphic. But they did keep her bum in. Which
I was going to say, Linda Kozlowski's ass, they keep that in.
Yeah.
But the S-word, I mean, they cut out.
Funny story about censorship. I believe this to be true, but apparently when The Sound of Music came out, the Argentinian Film Board thought the film was too long, so they cut out all the songs.
Well, that means, you know, I'd probably enjoy that movie better. I got to find the Argentinian cut.
I just love the fact that there's a movie called The Sound of Music, and all the way through, it's just like, it's about some people hiding from the Nazis. I don't get it.
No, man. It's ironic. It's The Sound of Music. You know, the Nazis, the music died.
Didn't most of the Nazis end up in Argentina after the war? Isn't that a thing?
Yeah, Paraguay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a great story about that real quick. My girlfriend, she went to school with this girl who... her family's from Cuba, and she's showing her picture of her grandparents, and she's like, said the dude was, you know, white, blonde hair, blue eyes, and she's like, oh, he's originally from Argentina, my grandpa. And she's like, did your grandpa have to leave Europe unexpectedly before he moved to, and it's like, she said it was so obvious this is a German that had lived, you know. It's like, but of course this kid didn't want to, you know, the family lore probably didn't pass down that, you know, grandpa was a member of the Death's Head at Auschwitz.
I would love to see that moment where she has that epiphany. She's like, wait, are we the baddies?
I always love the one in, I think it was Family Guy, where they went to Germany and they're going on a history tour, and he's going, why has it got nothing here listed between 1939 and 1945? Everyone was on holiday.
That's a true story, though. That is a true story that I love to tell, because he said still that girl, you know, still had no idea, did not put two and two together.
All right, you two.
Anyway,
I'm going to. I think we've done all our closing, so we've
done all the damage we can do.
we'll start anew in 2020. You remember when we used to watch movies that took place in the far flung future of 1997? It's 2022, for Christ's sake.
We got old.
We got old fast. But
I can still pass for 25. I used to always say my dad was 25. I know, because I counted the rings around his eyes.
Passing a 25-year-old walnut later on the toilet is not the same thing. Just saying. With that horrible bit of disgusting joke that I just attempted, we will let you guys go, and we will see you on the next stream.